gosh, I don't know where to start. Right, first of all, I'll just ask you all stand up. Turn your chairs around. No, so then you can't do that. Sorry, you were going to all get up then, weren't you? Oh, gosh. Right, for those that don't know me, my name's Julie Lord. I will try and look at all here, but I'm so nervous, so nervous. I say Lord. I had to slip that one in. I'm just going to start off with saying that I turned 40 back in March, and the reason why I say that is because 6 years ago I was told by my doctor that I wasn't going to see 40. If I carried on drinking and doing what I was doing, I weren't going to see 40. So I just wanted to say that beginning. Oh gosh, I need a drink of water, I think. Right, so I'm going to start and I'm going to kind of take you through my life from beginning. And then when I get to the bit where God saved me, I'm just kind of going to shove different things in there, so it won't actually be in order. So I grew up on a council estate in Bolton called Oldham's Estate, and I lived there with my mum and dad and my little brother David. I had a good family upbringing, actually. I had nanas and grandads, aunties, uncles, loads of cousins. And my mum worked, my dad worked. They both worked really hard. We had everything we wanted. Good holidays, Christmases. When I was about six, my mum met this... she met this guy who lived across the road from her, and he was like... we called him the electric man. My mum had... it was electric meters then, so if the electric went, you had to slot 50p in. So that's how she met him. That's how everybody met him. Anyway, he was a single man. He was in his 50s. And he was looking after his mum. He never got married or anything like that. He didn't have kids. He was looking after his mum, who was bedfast, and she was like 91. And I loved her. She was amazing. I used to go over to get the 50p so I could talk to her and sit on bed. She was blind and she couldn't hear much, but she used to love me. She used to think I had an unusual name. I used to sit and talk to her for hours. So that's how I got to know him. He was called Billy, and that's how we got to know him. And I used to go over all the time playing, and he spoilt me rotten. He had quite a lot of money, and he just spoilt me rotten. I don't mean 10p toffees from shop. I'm on about bikes and everything. When I was about... I'm going to jump straight into it. When I was about eight, he started to abuse me. I'm going to keep it together. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry for pausing. He started to abuse me, sexually abuse me. I never told anybody, and that went on for... I'm trying to keep it together. And so that went on for... Well, it went on till I was 14, actually. But in that time, I used to go to this... I went to Oldham's Lane County Primary School, which was just a normal school on the estate. And I hated school. I had loads of friends. Everybody were my friend. And I was very shy at school, very timid, probably because of what was going on. But I absolutely hated school, and I just got through school. And basically, I just carried on every day as normal. I can't really tell you when I was little what went through my mind, being abused, you know, but I always felt different to everybody else at school. So I never, you know, just think little things like PE for me, holding hands, and, you know, I just hated the whole thing. Anyway, when I got to secondary school, pretty much the same thing. I couldn't concentrate at school. I was, you know, the abuse was worse at this point. It was just terrible. And I just didn't like school. I didn't have the same things with the other girls. I wasn't, you know, they was all going to cinemas and doing all normal things like that. And I was just worried about what was happening to me at home all the time. My relationship with my mum was My mum's a brilliant mum, I have to say that. She's an amazing mum, and she's the one person that's been there for me throughout everything. My relationship with my dad used to hit me. My dad used to drink, and my dad used to take it out on me. So I never had anyone really to turn to talk to. And that's why I kept it all to myself. I never told anybody. I never even told friends, and just no one. So I went through secondary school kind of wagging it all the time, going into the forest. By 12, I was smoking cannabis. And it wasn't a peer thing. It wasn't something I was made doing. It was something I did for myself, because it worked everything out for me. It was, you know, I go in, this is why I'm so scared today talking. It made me think, doing my testimony, how I hated drama at school. You know, come on, get up and say a bit about yourself. I was like, no! Run straight out of there. And yeah, so by the time I think I was 14, and I met my girl's dad, and I was a teenager, I loved him. We're going to be together forever, you know, the fairy tale thing. And but on the other hand, I had a hidden agenda. I thought, you know, I get pregnant off this person I love, we get a counsellor house, and then Billy will leave me alone then, you know, he won't touch me anymore. And that was my plan. I was pregnant at 14, and the family was like, oh, you know. Anyway, I lost it at 12 weeks. I lost the baby. And so I was shoved back to school. And my plan didn't work out. I was like, oh, I've got to do it again. So the abuse was still happening. And I fell pregnant again, but this time off the abuser. And And I'm really sorry to have to say this, but I had an abortion. I didn't tell my boyfriend. I told him that I'd gone out one night and got drunk, and I slept with somebody that I couldn't remember his name or anything like that. Wasn't true, but I didn't want to tell the truth, so I had an abortion. The whole family was like, huh? You know, you were so excited about having your first. Why do you want to do this? But I didn't say anything to anybody. Carried on. And then one day I just said to Billy, I said, you know, you touch me. And I actually said, my uncle will put you in the back of his car and take you up somewhere and you'll never be seen again. Because I had a beautiful family. I had good nanas, grandads, cousins, but I did have a couple of hard uncles. So, and he knew it. So I kind of threatened him with that, and it worked. He didn't touch me then. That was the last time he ever touched me. But the tables had turned then, and I was like, well, I still want your money. You know, that's what you're going to, you know, you're going to give me the money. And I still had him in his life. I still looked after him every single day. He was getting older and older. And then I fell pregnant again at 16. And this time the pregnancy was going all right. And I got the council house and we moved in together. And then I gave birth to Chantelle, my first daughter, who's now 23. And things started going wrong then with my boyfriend. He was... I knew when I'd met him, he was into stealing cars when I met him. You know, so they should have been doing doing back then, but I had a plan, you know. So I wasn't... And I liked the bad boy thing, I suppose. But on the other hand, when I look back now, I suppose I didn't think that I could have a nice boyfriend who had a good job. You know, why would he want to be with me? So this is the only thing I thought I could pick. And things were all right at first, but then he started hitting me. But that come with who he's were, I suppose. And then just after Chantelle, about 6 months later, I fell pregnant again. And I was 5 months pregnant when I found out I was having a boy. And I was like, yes, you know, having a boy. Anyway, I went into labour at 8 months. And, oh God, I'm doing it again. Anytime I come to something like that. And I got told through scan that his organs were on the outside. So So he wasn't, he just wasn't strong enough. So I gave birth to him and he died in my hand.
Oh.
Oh. So, I missed out the part where we got married after Chantelle. Billy had given us £5,000 and we went and got married. So like, yeah, we'll have this big party. But my husband's family said to me, you know, brush it underneath the carpet. It's gone, you've got Chantelle. Chantelle was only 10 months old at the time, so I still had her at home waiting for me. So that's exactly what I did. I just shoved it under the carpet, forgot all about it. That was the advice I got given. And then the year after, I had my second daughter, Danielle, and I went back to work. I was working at Littlewoods. I was a packer, picker and a packer. And it was really hard. I had two kids. I had an abusive husband. I had Billy still coming round on a weekly basis, you know, like nothing had happened, giving me the money. And I had a gorgeous house. For being 21, having two children, I had an amazing house. But, you know, I look back now for what I went through. You know, it wasn't worth it, but there you go. So it carried on like that for a while. I was so distraught after losing my son. Even though I carried on being a mother, it was always there. I took it everywhere with me. I had pictures of him and... I kind of, when I spoke to people, I made a big deal of it. You know, people was like, oh, I don't really want to talk to her, you know. She freaks me out. I was 24 and the abuse got worse with my husband. He tried draining me in the bath one day. He was so paranoid about me. I always thought I was going to leave. I never told him about the abuse. I always felt like I was with someone that didn't really know who I was. You know, you think that when you meet your husband, the person you want to be with for the rest of your life, they know you inside out, but he knew nothing, really. And if he did, he wouldn't have been on board with it. He'd have been like, you know, he wasn't a very nice man. So when I was 24, we got divorced, and then I become a single mum. Single mum of two. To me, I always said three, so I was a single mum of two, and I was still struggling with the son I lost. So I just carried on. I can always say that my mum was always there for me. My mum, I love my mum to bits, but my mum's not really maternal. She's a great mum. She was always there financially. And my mum has a pub. She's had a pub now for 17 years up in Bolton. So I was there a lot. I never wanted to be at home. I hated being at home with the girls. Even though I had a lovely house, I just didn't want to be at home. And I just kind of struggled along. And then one day I went out on a night out and to Wigan Pier. I had an ecstasy tablet and I had some cocaine. And I loved it. It was like I was a mum during the week and then at weekend, I deserve this. I deserve to go out, you know. And I used to do that every weekend. I just used to go out, drink. I wasn't so much drinking then, but it was all part of where we went, you know, the clubs. That's what we did. And for me, it wasn't about going out, getting boyfriends, or it was about forgetting everything. It just made me forget until Monday come and it's all there again. I decided to move up Farnworth when I was 26 to get out of Bolton. I just felt like I had so many bad memories there. I wanted to go, and Billy had died just before my 26th birthday. Billy had died, and to be honest with you, I can't even remember how I felt about that. About his death. You know, he'd been such a massive part of my life since I was six. And he were gone. And so were the money. So I was like a single mother and I was struggling really bad. And so I moved to Farnworth and I was still going out. I was still clubbing it. I was moving from house to house. I never settled anywhere. And then I met Robin, who who's Courtney's dad, I'll tell you that in a minute. And I met Robin, and I thought I'd landed on my feet. He was a good guy. He didn't take drugs, he didn't drink. He was working, so I had this kind of nice boyfriend. So basically we moved in pretty quick. I got pregnant with Courtney. He took on Chantelle and Danielle, and we had a good life. And then we moved to Averton, which was his house, and things just started going wrong. I don't think it had much to do with Robin, what he was doing. It was me. There was something up with me. And I decided to leave him, and I went back to Bolton. I lived with my mum. But I kept going back and going back, backwards and forwards, you know. And I started to drink at weekends. It was a bottle of Lambrini at weekend. I thought, you know, I like, again, as the kids were going to, I was being a mum in the week, and I didn't think I was doing anything wrong, just drinking at the weekend on my Facebook. And that's what I did, but it got worse and worse and worse. And then eventually he didn't want to be with me. And he kicked us out, and he had to go and live with my mum, living in the pub, which didn't help. He was surrounded by drink. And at that point, I felt so much guilt. So I got this big house, this big massive house, at £650 a month. I thought, yeah, I can afford it, you know, I can do it. Because I'd lived in such a nice house, I didn't want to go. And, you know, the kids had iPads and all that and everything they wanted. And I thought, I can't go into a house now and give them nothing. Chantelle was 15, Danielle was 14, and Courtney was 5. So I got this house, and it was too much for me to handle. Too much to keep up with everything in it, the gas, the electric. It was a huge house. And Chantelle was, like I said, she was 15, so she was going through exams at school. Danielle was just kind of like following everything Chantelle were doing, and Courtney was just little innocent Courtney. And everything got too much for me, and I was drinking more and more again. Anyway, one night I'd gone out and I got really drunk, and I'd gone to a club, and cut a long story short, these two guys, they spiked me drink and, well, followed me home, and the rest is, I don't need to say what else happened, but yeah. And that just it tipped me over edge. I lost my head, and Chantelle was going out, not listening to anything I was saying. Police were out every night trying to find her. Danielle was running back up to Averton where we live because she missed her friends. Courtney was at her dad's at weekend, and I just felt like everything was just caving in on me. So Chantelle went to school one day and told social services that Mum was drinking. So they got involved, and they said they wanted the girls to be with family members for a few weeks while I sorted myself out, even though I won't be going doing that in a few weeks, but there you go. While I sorted myself out, I was so angry. I was so angry that I was been a mum since I was 17. And I was 31-year-old, and they was taking my girls away from me. Like, you know, I was like, it made me worse. I know that might sound really selfish, and some people might think that you should, well, get up, you know, sort yourself out for your girl's sake. And I did go to AA, and I did go to meetings, even though the meetings I went to was right next to a pub, like, you know, cheers, on a Friday night as well. But I really tried, and so week turned into a month turned into three turned into six. I was like, no, they promised me they was going to come back. Chantelle, my eldest daughter, she just went out and went off the rails. She was drinking, she was having sex with boys, older boys, and getting into drugs and stuff. She didn't want to come back anyway then. Danielle was staying with her best friend's mum, which I agreed to at the time. She would be in spot rotten, and she didn't want to come back then either. But who would want to come back to the mess I was? I was seeing Courtney every weekend. But do you know what? I was seeing her every weekend, and the worst bit was actually seeing her. I know that sounds awful, but during the week I was doing my thing, even though I wasn't doing anything apart from drinking. And then at weekend I was seeing her, and when she had to go back, I was just drinking even more and more. So that just went on for a while. Anyway, I lost the house, I lost my job, and I ended up on the streets, and I was drinking, taking drugs, and then I'd pick myself up for weeks, and I'd be all right, because I wanted to, you know, I didn't want to let anybody down. A lot of it I did in secret. A lot of my drinking I did in secret. Most things are, you know, I couldn't keep a secret because I'd end up in police cells. I'd wake up sometimes in police cells, not even knowing how I got there. Wake up on the street. My mum had took me in time after time, but I just burnt my bridges with everybody, basically. You know, because the drink was so important. It got to a point where I couldn't get up in the morning without having a drink because I was shaking so much. I had the withdrawals. Anyway, when I got told off the doctor that I wouldn't see 40, something triggered inside me. I don't know what it was. I can't really say, but something I knew I was gonna. I knew myself. I thought I'm gonna die if I carry on like this. I'm not going to be here for, you know, for seeing my kids ever again. Even though they're not with me, and I can't cope with the fact that they're not with me, and I have to, you know, think that maybe I'll never get them back again the way I want them back, the way it used to be when I was, you know, a brilliant mum and I had brilliant kids and a lovely house. So I thought, I've got to do something about this. And one, I know this sounds really stupid, one day I got up and I decided, I thought, I can't go to my uncle, I can't go to my mum. You know, and I could go to them and I could say, if you've got £5,000, send me just like in the middle of nowhere so I can get help with this drinking. But I didn't, because I felt so embarrassed. I felt like I'd let everybody down. All my family, I've got their own businesses, they're all highly educated, and I'm the proper sheep of the family. I'm the only one that didn't do anything apart from have kids, but then I caught that up as well. I didn't even get that right. And so I decided to put myself in prison. Anyway, I asked this guy, I won't go into detail about him because I don't think that would be fair. So basically, we faked a burglary, and I went to prison for 10 months. But entering prison, I was such a mess. I wish I could show you the picture that I had wearing my neck for 10 months in prison. I looked awful. And I can't remember what it is in the Bible, but is it when the sheep goes missing or something, it comes back like I had twigs in my ear. I hadn't made it to the toilet sometimes. It was really, really bad. I can't stress how bad I was, how much of a mess I were. You know, I was disgusted in myself. I got to prison, a mess. And my first day at prison, I didn't get bail, which the judge was like, really like, why does she not want no application for bail? Because I knew I'd go straight to the shop. I knew why I was doing this burglary, so I knew that if I'd have got bail, I would just go straight to the shop because I couldn't handle it. So I refused bail and I went straight to prison. And when I got there, I was an absolute mess. And but I knew why I was there. I knew I wanted to sort my life out. I knew there was something with me. I don't know what it were, but you know, there was something with me. And for the first week, I was hallucinating. I was being attacked by dogs. I wasn't, but this is all in my head. This was the withdrawal from the drink. I was, oh God, it was awful. The first week in there, I just wanted to die. I really wanted to die. I didn't want to wake up another morning and have to cope with this again. And after a week, they knew all about me drinking. I was a registered alcoholic, by the way. And so they knew this, and I was on Libium for the drink. I was on all sorts. I was drugged up to eyeballs for the first 2 weeks. Didn't know, you know, where I was. After being in there for a couple of weeks, it was like I was walking around in a bubble. You know, like, I wasn't scared of anything in there. I wasn't scared of these girls, you know. And there was really intimidating girls. I think if I had to put myself in there myself, and I would have been really frightened, because it's such a frightening place in prison. Really frightening. But there was just something there protecting me and getting me through each day. I've missed loads out, you know, but there you go. One day I remember coming out of my cell and I seen this man. Didn't know who he was, because it's like an all-women's prison. So I seen this man and I thought, wonder if he's a doctor. So I just went running over. I said, oh, excuse me, sir. And he must have seen how desperate I were and took me into this room. And I just burst out crying and told him basically my life story. And he assessed me then and told me I had clinical depression. And that for me was like, oh, so I'm not a bad mum. You know, I didn't deserve to get abused. I didn't deserve all them things. It made me realise that all the things that had happened to me when I was little, I took them into motherhood. I took them into adulthood without realising it. And it turned out, you know, that when something really bad happened in my life, when I split up with Rob, when I felt like I had that family, you know, I'd lost that, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. But to realise that for me was just the best thing ever. Anyway, he put me on antidepressants. I had counselling for sexual abuse. I had counselling for the bereavement of my son. I had extensive counselling in everything. It wasn't Christian counselling, but it was extensive. It was really big. That went on for about 3 months. Anyway, after 3 months, I was feeling really good. I threw myself into education. I did my GCSEs. I never did at school. I did English, maths. God knows where all this was coming from, you know. I was just walking around prison like, you know, like I was in college or uni or something. And, oh God, like the teachers, they just loved me. I don't even know why. They really wanted to see, they'd seen the best in me. So I did that, and then I just threw myself into everything. I did drugs and alcohol. I went on an alcohol program for 18 weeks. And I even got, after doing it, I was one of the group, kind of the group leaders in it. And I was just helping everybody. It was really weird, and I was helping everybody. And then when the course finished, the governor come to my room, to my cell, and asked me if I'd facilitate the next one. And what kind of, not facilitate, but come in and tell these new women that was on this group about, you know, my drinking and how this course had helped me. That's what they wanted me to do. And when I was actually stood up there just telling the girls a bit about what the course had done for me, she said, oh, have you ever been in prison? And I was like, I am in prison. And they was like, oh my God, really? That gave me so much confidence, and my confidence just grew and grew and grew and grew. And then one day I got put on another house, on another wing, and I was with some not so very nice girls, and they was trying to bully me, they was trying to intimidate me, and I thought, and they was taking drugs. I thought I'm not even gonna go down that road. But it was horrible. It was really horrible. I thought, oh God, why has everything gone good? And then it's, oh, what do I do? How do I get out of this? And so I tried to keep away from as much as I could, but you know, when you're in a cell with 4 girls, it's impossible. And if they do anything wrong and get caught, you're all going down together, whether you've done it or not. So I thought, I've got to get out of this. You know, I was feeling so good about myself at first time in my life. And I was sat in medication one night, and I overheard 2 officers talking. One was a big officer, main officer. And I heard him talking about this job going on the Keller. Now, the Keller is a prison inside the prison where the mental health prisoners are. And they had really bad mental health issues. They was hanging themselves. They was self-harming. Really, really bad stuff. And I overheard him saying there was an orderly job going. And anyway, when he walked me back to my cell, I said, oh, sorry for being rude. I said, but would you consider me, you know, for an interview for the job? I said, I've whipped my mental health on the out. You know, I was talking like I wasn't a prisoner, you know, but I was. And I think he appreciated my honesty and gave me the job interview. And the next day, I went down onto the Keller and saw you, like, in the prison. And there's this, you know, gates, electric things all, and you went out into this new prison. So you was like, the people in my prison couldn't see me in this prison. So it was like coming away from it kind of thing. And I was stepped into this job, and there was another girl that was an orderly that had been there for 2 months called Susie, who's now my best friend. And I went in, and it was so scary. They were like zombies walking around. I'm not saying it in an awful way, but they were so really, really scary women, and they had so much bad depression, and oh, I can't even begin to tell you what it was like. I was like, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done here? Anyway, I carried on with it, and Susie chucked me in at the deep end, like, you know. So we had to do the washing, the ironing, feeding them breakfast, dinner, tea, all that. And she chucked me in at the deep end, and I was like, oh gosh, what am I going to do? Anyway, she kept telling me a little bit about, she was a Christian, and she was in there for, basically they said that she had a sham marriage, she was keeping her husband in the country, which wasn't true, but she was in there for that reason, which now I know God put her in there for me. And she started telling me about things at church, and I was like, oh, I'm not really interested, you know. I've been through too much for believing all that. and then I got used to the job, and I absolutely loved it. And the officers, they was like, they respected me. You know, they were like, I wasn't in prison. I felt like I just went to work every day. Anyway, the girls, they loved me and Susie. We used to give them the dinner, and they'd come to us at the hatch at breakfast and dinner time, and we were so nice with them and sit with them. And that wasn't in our job description, really, to having to sit with them or do anything and any activities with them, but we did. It's better than just sitting there doing nothing. We did activities with them, and the chaplain lady used to come round, and they were all like, you know, not wanting to do anything. And I had them up singing. We had them up singing songs. Me, I had people up singing songs about, you know, God and stuff like that. I wasn't really there myself, but I loved it. Anyway, one day I remember washing somebody's cell out, and I thought I was high off the fumes. I was laughing my head off at her. And the officer come in and bust the door open, and I was like, you know, stood there like, and he went, oh, please don't stop, please, like a breath of fresh air, he said. He said, you've been here, I've been here 20 odd years, and I've never heard laughter like this, no, in all my life. Don't stop. So from that day on, we never stopped laughing, me and Susie. We just giggled at everything, and the girls giggled with us. So we got told that the amount of hangings and self-harming and the depression just come down for the first time they'd ever known. And then one day we asked, could we take the girls to church? They was like, no, you know, I don't think that'd be a good idea, because they were pretty bonkers. And anyway, it got agreed that we could. So we took, and they was drinking the holy water and everything, and it was crazy. But watching them kneel down and praying and writing in the prayer book, for me, was like, wow, you know, I've, like, kind of let this happen. I don't understand why. And then it just started making me think about God myself, and I'm thinking, wow, he's here. He's, you know, he's... And then I'm thinking, when I first come into prison, how did I do that on my own? If he weren't there, I couldn't have done that. And I went running up to Susie, and I said, Susie, He's real. I think he's real. Like, I said, oh, come to church tonight. There's this guy coming in speaking. So I did. I went to church. I got permission to go and I went. And this, basically, cut a long story short, he wanted you just to surrender yourself to God. And if you did, bow your head. And I remember bowing my head. And he's speaking and he's saying, and I remember trying to lift my head up and I couldn't. And I just felt something really soft on the back of my neck. And that's when I give myself to Jesus and asked him to take away all my sins. I used to have really, really bad dreams about the abuse when I was little. I'd had them all my life. I don't think there were a night I ever went bed where I didn't dream. And I said to Susie, how do I get rid of these dreams? She said, pray, ask God tonight. Ask him and he'll take them away from you. I thought, what, as simple as that? Anyway, the lights went out, I was in my cell and I did exactly that. And I said, please just take these dreams away from me because I can't cope. I can't cope with them. And I went to sleep that night and I got up next morning. I slept all night and I had a dream. I didn't even dream about it. And I went running to work. I was crying my eyes out and I was saying, Susie, it's amazing. I just wanted to know more and more about it, more. And things then, every day then, things were just getting better and better. The girls, I got moved off that cell where the girls, you know, could have dragged me back into things easily. Because Christmas was coming up, I was without my family, I wasn't with the girls. And they was all, you know, getting off the bed, so I could have easily slipped down that. But because I were in this job on the cell and I was doing so much good things through God, that they said, they put me on a mature ladies wing, which was amazing, because it was, well, I was with mature ladies and, you know, there wasn't going on as much. And then just things were just got better and better every day. My counselling ended because she thought, you know, I'd come to some closure on things. I didn't know how I had, but I was talking about the abuse then with, like, it was, you know, like something that happened. And that's what happened. Where before I wouldn't have been able to do that, I'd have just been a withering wreck. And then these two girls come in. I can't remember what they were called. I should have asked you, actually. But they was doing Bible studies at church, and I thought, oh, Bible studies, that's, you know, I've had these experiences and that, but I'm talking about reading the Bible. I hadn't actually read picked my Bible up. It was there, but I hadn't read anything in it. So I'd gone along to these Bible studies, and I'll be honest, it would get me at the cell for an hour. Anyway, I went, and these two girls, and I was a bit rude, actually, at first. I was saying, you know, how come all these bad things happen then, blah, blah, blah. And I remember teaching me something about the rocky roads. I can't remember proper what it was. And I thought, God, that's me. I've built my life on a rocky road. How can I expect for, you know, go through it, sailing, if that's how I've built everything on. And it made sense to me. Things made sense to me. Instead of just think, you know, when you do stuff out the Bible, you think, oh God, that's a bit far-fetched. That's a bit, I don't know. When I seen it differently, it all started making sense. Anyway, they weren't long before I was coming out. I think I had about a month left. And I was really scared about coming out. Because I thought, you know, I know I've been in here for like nearly a year. But that's where the drinking is out there. That's where I start paying the bills again. That's where I start becoming a mother again. I had it all to come out to, kind of thing. And I was really nervous about that. But also, I had this like strength, I don't know where it was coming from, but it was like I'd been building a boat or something in prison already, it set sail. It's weird. I just not like that. And then Emma come into church, didn't you, one day? Were you doing the message or something?
No, I came to meet you.
Was that what it was? Oh my God, I'm maybe crying more. So that's what it were, the two girls. I'd said, I'm from Bolton, so I said that when I get out, I want to move to Lee. Don't ask me why I want to move to Lee, because I've got no connections in Lee. I don't even know anyone in Lee. I think I thought it was a new start, not too far from Bolton, not too close. So I think that's why I chose it. And then So, yeah, so she brought Emma in. I remember us going into a back room, and I told you a little bit, didn't I? I mean, I could have been a murderer, for all she knew. But yet she gave me a mobile number, because I said I really wanted to go to church when I got out. And she gave me the mobile number, and do you know what? I was blown away with that number. I looked at it every night for 4 weeks. When I get out, I'm ringing that number. You know. Anyway, and that's what I did. I got out of prison, and because I was on, because I'd done quite a long stretch, I was on probation for 10 months, so I had to report to them every week. And I think because of the drinking, they wanted me to be kind of with somebody, you know, that would keep an eye on me, that they weren't going out there on my own. And so they put me with my brother. Oh gosh. My brother was going through his own tough times at the time. He was drinking, his girlfriend was heavily pregnant, so I had the back room, and it wasn't really good for me. They were having parties every weekend, people around drinking and all that, and I just stayed off the drink, but it was hard. It was like in my face. And I rang Emma straight away when I got out. She picked me up on a Saturday, on the Sunday, and she said, "This is taking me to church." And she said, "Church is not on today." Can't remember why it weren't on. So we're all going to Jackie's house, and we're all sat at Jackie's house. Everybody were praying. I was like, "Oh my God, what have I come to?" Some kind of a Elizabeth's praying, and she's praying, and someone else is praying. I thought, I've never felt so uncomfortable ever, but I knew that I knew that I had to be there. I knew, and I wanted to come again because I wanted to see the real church the week after. So I'm thinking this church, you know, with bells and all this. And when we went to Sports Village Church for the first time and everyone's munching away and whatever, I was like, really? But, and I did have a few hard weeks, didn't I? I was really upset. But just coming every week, I just wanted to go every week. Even though I can't say that right then anything happened to me, I just wanted to come every week, and Emma was there for me. She used to pick me up every week, take me to church. And then one day, I thought, right, I've got to get out of my brother's house now, because it's getting too much for me, you know. It was really, the temptation was still there. Even though I knew I didn't want to go back there, it was in my face. So I said to my friend one day, I didn't have any money, so I couldn't get a house just like that. So I thought, right, I'm going to walk the streets in Lee today. I'm going to find, you know, usually when you see it on the window, you see, form this, you don't have to pay all this, this, that and that. So that's what my intention were. And I'm walking around streets of Lee, and God said to me, go and ask that woman over there for an house. I was like, really? That's how I felt, he said, on my heart, go and ask that woman. So this woman just had like a white top on, a black skirt, bit of a handbag, and she was coming out like a block of flats. So I went over to her, because I didn't have much time to think about it. I just went over to her and I said, oh, please don't think I'm weird, but God's just asked me to ask you for an house. I'm not joking. I said, I've just got out of, I'm not weird, honestly. I said, I've just got out of prison, and I used to be an alcoholic, and I was just told. And she started crying, and I was like, oh gosh. So she said, I can't chat now. She gave me a number. She said, ring me later on, text me, and I'll ring you back later on. So I did that. Anyway, we spoke on the phone that night, and it turns out she was called Ginny. She was a Christian, and I don't know the reason then. I'll tell you in a minute why she was crying. But cut a long story short, she met me next day, took me out for lunch, and gave me a brand new house. She was an estate agent. She had houses. And she gave me that house. I was in a brand new house in Lee on Bowie Street, just off Twist Lane. And I'd moved in within days. Anyway, she come round my house one night, and I said to her, can I ask you why you cried? You know, when I come over, she said, because what had happened is, she was a big businesswoman, and she'd been in a relationship for years with this man, and he took her for everything she had, and it knocked her faith a bit. And when I come over and said, God had just asked me for a name, she knew that was like really true, and it just like, no, that's why she cried. And we'd become really good friends, and it turned out that I told her about which church Emma would take him in. It turned out she'd been herself to Sports Village Church herself with her mum. I think she attends one in Hindley Green or Hindley, one or two. (Clears throat) I've lost myself now. So loads of amazing things have happened to me. I can't tell you every single one of them since coming out of prison what's happened, through God, I can't, because I'll be here all day and I've only got half now. But I'll tell you another one. Me and my husband were going through a really bad patch, and I mean a really bad patch. And I left him for a few days and I went to Kelly's. And I remember going to Kelly's and I was dead distraught. I was crying and everything, and I got boys in bed that night, and I turned into Kelly Dinner and I said, I feel like I'm here for another reason. I don't feel like I'm here for me. And then and Kelly's come to God. She went to church next day, and then we went to that, what did we go to? That royal appointment. And basically now Kelly's given her life to God. But doesn't it show that through my sorrows, through my heartbreak, that God has let me save somebody else, to get saved, through me being upset? It's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here for me. You don't want me to do this. And I just think that's amazing. And do you know, he gives me confirmation all the time as well. He always shows me. Because I'm one of them, I'd be like, well, maybe it weren't because of that, maybe it was because of this, coincidence. But he always shows me every time. And then, me and my husband, before we become my husband, we've been married 2 years now, we moved to Averton. We got a council house in Averton, because we both had separate houses in Leigh, so we got a council house in Averton. And I mustn't have long. But we was going through antisocial behaviour. It was horrendous. My next door neighbour just wanted to smash my head in all the time. I probably would have fighted her years ago and told her to jog on, but I didn't. I stuck with God and I thought, no, I'm not going to retaliate. I'm not going to be that person. You know, I've come too far. I don't want to go back down that road anyway. And I think she walked all over me because she knew that. She probably thought I was weak, which I wasn't weak. I was just not that person I used to be. And so she was getting drunk, she was having parties, she was driving me bonkers, it was awful. Her husband went to attack my husband. And we were just going through that for 12 months. It was a lot worse than what I'm saying, but I've not got time to say all that. And one night Jackie rang me and said, we're all going to pray tonight. Everybody's going to pray for you tonight. There's going to be this, you know, to me, it was going to be this big prayer thing going on. And then next day, I got a phone call off Jackie again to say that Phil and Barbara were going on holiday. How beautiful is that? And he got up and he had me on his heart. He had us on his heart. And he said, I feel like God's told me to write a letter to the council about this, you know, this family that's coming to church that are suffering so bad, going through this antisocial behaviour, that they need to get out. And that's exactly what they did. And the next day after that, I got a phone call to say, we've got you a house. Not only did he give me a house, though, he gave me a house right next to church, right next to everybody. And I moved within like 3 days. I think I moved on the Friday. How amazing is that? I have to mention my role models since I've come to God, since I've been out, and that's Jackie and Denise, and I think they know that anyway. I always say Denise is like my Claire. If anybody's watched War Room, she's mine. She's just amazing. She really is. I can't even begin to even tell you how much Jackie and Denise have been there for me, and I love them to bits. I think that's about it, really. I think that's where I am today. My life ain't perfect today. It really isn't. I've got a 23-year-old daughter who's got bipolar and BPD, which is borderline personality disorder. And every time my phone rings, I don't know if that's a call to say whether she's dead or not. Because she tries to kill herself every weekend. She's really messed up. She blames it all on me. It's all my fault. Which I know that's not true. I did let my girls down. I let them down really bad. I let them down emotionally, you know. I've tried these last 6 years since I've come to God to put things right, you know, and I've done it the wrong way. I've tried to, like, give them money and, you know, do things like that. Now, my relationship with Chantelle, she doesn't want to know me now. But I can pray for her. Mm-hmm. I pray for her every night. I pray for protection on her. And every time she tries to commit suicide, it don't happen. I get phone calls that she's a missing person. It's a daily battle, let me tell you. But with God in my life now, it's like so much easier. I would have gone to pieces all going through all this now. I probably would have been on a vodka bottle or something. Danielle, my other daughter. I'm dead to Danielle. I went to prison, I let her down. I was selfish. Danielle doesn't know anything about my past. My girls don't know anything about what happened to me when I were young and stuff like that. Because as a mother, you protect them from that, don't you? And But I do believe in my heart. As much as I believe in God, people have said to me, oh, if God's so real, why is he not doing it? Why is he not, you know, putting your family back together? But I tell you what I believe. I truly believe that one day he will. It might not be how I want it to be. So I sat there at Christmas and I see, you know, you, your family, and I think, oh my God, I want that. I miss that so much. You know, I missed out on the proms. I missed out on graduation. I can only see it through Facebook. I can't even be a part of it. I can't even comment on it because I know it's not valid to them, and it's not what they want to hear. But through God, I know that he can make things better. Yeah. Courtney, my little girl, I see her every weekend. It's really hard, but do you know, I count my blessings now. Every time I see her, I see God's there with me, and I see beautiful things. I see just her smiling, or when she says, "Mummy, I love you." I've got two beautiful boys.
Now you've got a nice in Riley.
He's such an handful, Riley, but he's my handful. Yeah. And not only did God give me another son, but he gave me two.
Yeah.
Two beautiful boys. So today and every day now, I count my blessings. And I am so far away from that person that I used to be. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even want to go back to that person. Yeah, I got abused. Yeah, all these bad things happened to me. But look where I am today. Look what it brought me to. And I would just want to say amen for that.
Yeah. Amen.